Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gabaza, and for today, as has become a bit of a custom on the Business Day Spotlight, we are talking to a business leader. For today, we're going to be talking to Nompumelelo Moko, who is the executive for intelligent customer experience at technology firm Dimension Data. They are one of the biggest technology companies in South Africa and on the continent. If any of you have ever had a chance to drive by their campus in Bryanston, you know the company. They have a number of different operating companies, merchants, internet solutions, but they've been going through, you know, a bit of a rebrand, and we're just going to be hearing about what they're doing as a business and what Nompumelelo and the team are doing in terms of customer experiences. Nompumelelo, greetings to you.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, Mudiwa. Great to be hosted by you during this time.
No. Thank you so much for joining us for today in the morning, the afternoon, and the evening. I just wanted to maybe begin just talking about, you know, the Dimension Data business, quite an operation that you guys have in South Africa and Middle East, in Africa. You know, you've got ownership in Asia, all of these things, but there's been a recent move towards consolidating some of the brands that was announced earlier this year. Could you just give us some insight into what that vision is about and maybe how far that process has gone since it was announced earlier on?
Thanks, Mudiwa. I must say that it's exciting times for us at Dimension Data. First and foremost, this is the year we're celebrating our 38 years as an organization, as a company. And if I look at our one DD, one people, one name journey, I mean, this started conceptually from our entity company. So if I look at what entity did in the last 2 years, 2018, 2019, they also went through a big consolidation process where they talk about 30-odd something companies around the globe and merge them. And as I mentioned, Data, we retained our brand in the MEA region, given the fact that we had the pedigree, we were founded in South Africa, and therefore remaining as I mentioned, Data, instead of changing to entity, became of prime importance to us, just from a legacy perspective. So with the one DD, one people, one name operating model that we actually undergoing. The big driver for it, there's a few drivers for it, but the first driver was from client feedback. So our clients were saying to us, Dimension Data, we love you. You've been our service provider and partner for a number of years, but it's getting difficult to work with you. You've got several brands. When we talk to you, we must talk to different people, different contact points. It's just getting hectic for us to talk to you. Can we have a central point, a central contact, one contract that we have with you? So we've been saying to ourselves, we would like to have an easier and flexible way of working with our clients. So that was the first driver. Secondly, we looked at, because we had different brands within the same company, it means we had different exec teams, different cultures, different operating models. Sometimes we also had duplicating assets across the different brands. So some we cannibalize each other's clients and solutions because we're now running as silos. So we had to break that because we would not be able to work as agile as possible. So there was a second driver to make it easy for us to work together, to take out the overhead cost that was sitting in the business because now we've got these duplicated models and duplicated assets. And then just the third one was around growth. Looking at the fact that, as you're saying, we are a MEA business, Dimension Data, but we are a global business as well. For our products in the MEA space, we're looking at, in the Middle East, we had more the SI business running and driving. How did we grow our hosted business, our cloud business, and so on and so forth? It made sense to have one hub. In East Africa, we're predominantly driving the Internet Solutions brand, merchants, as well as the SI. Having that one hub in both East and West Africa became key for us to be able to consolidate the region, one, but have focused products that we actually drive into the region. And then South Africa as well, Southern Africa, because we include Namibia, Botswana, and Angola as part of the Southern Africa space. That became, because that's our hub, that's where, if I look at our market share across MEA, 90% of it sits in Southern Africa. So we also had to make sure that it's easier for us to drive. Our cost base makes it easier for us to be able to leverage from what we are driving and how we're growing and how we're being relevant. And also, when we move from being the brands to now, what we have right now is more the go-to market structure. So we've got the geos, which I mentioned before, which is Middle East, East and West Africa, Southern Africa, and then that is supported by the go-to markets, which ICX being where I'm predominantly running the intelligent customer experience. We've got iSecurity, we've got AI infrastructure, we've got iBusiness applications, as well as iWorkplace. So all the I is our theme for intelligent. So that becomes our product hub. Our product development hub is drives then the customer centricity of what our clients are saying. So how the go-to market structure is put together in terms of product development, that's driven by the customer centricity and trends in the market. So what the trends that we know that we notice, be it in customer experience, be it in applications, will be supported by our product development hub, which is selling the go-to market, which also supported by our OEM space, be it Microsoft, Cisco, Avaya, and so on and so forth. So that's how, in a nutshell, our operating model, how it's built up. But it is to ensure that we operate in a more agile fashion, that we are more flexible, quick turnaround. We ensure that we grow as a business, ensure that our customers grow. We ensure that our products are relevant for the market, and we also drive in cost reduction overall. So that's in a nutshell, Mudiwa.
And then, in terms of all of that, how does that then feed into the work that you are doing in terms of customer experiences? And as you're talking, could you just shed some light on what you guys mean by an intelligent customer experience?
Thanks, Mudiwa, for the question. So first, let me start off by explaining what intelligent customer experience. So initially, what we were predominantly working on, we were a contact center technology business, meaning that we would talk to all the big contact centers around the country, be it in the banking space, insurance space, retail, and so forth. And we would come into that environment, we would solution a particular product and then recommend the right technology for that particular contact center. That's what we predominantly did initially. Our pivot now as intelligent customer experience is linked on firstly understanding the trends in customer experience globally. What we understand and know about customer experience, especially for the MEA market, is that we are predominantly a voice market, meaning that customers want to talk to another person via the voice or telephone instead of an application, the website, or self-service. And I must say, during the whole COVID situation, that actually changed, but I'll talk about that in the later. So our pivot is moving from traditional contact center, but then adding on an element of analytics around how do you understand your customer, what products you need to give them, not products per se, but how do you need to communicate with them? Do you talk to them via phone? How do you turn around? How quick should you turn around in terms of your conversations with your clients? We also focus on automation. In the contact center, what should you be automating? For example, in the bank, customers call some of our clients around debit order rejections. How do we automate the process for that particular bank so that they reduce the number of people that are talking about the same thing each month, but have it as a process that the bot actually automates and does? The next one is around how do we manage workforce? given this current time with COVID, you've got our clients having certain agents sitting on site and some of them sitting remotely or at home. How do you help that particular client be able to understand what their agents are doing at home? How are they dealing with clients? How good is the service? How do they upkeep the quality? So we would be helping them in terms of those particular initiatives overall, as well as having a clear plan around their omni-channel strategy. Do they use voiceless, more WhatsApp, more website? That becomes the where our intelligence comes in as ICX and where the pivot is going. Now, how ICX fits into the operating model is that instead of us being just a business unit and a vertical business unit across MEA, I'm now able to leverage on, for example, infrastructure, because what's been the delay for the MEA market is that our companies have legacy infrastructure, be it an on-prem old legacy infrastructure, or they're still moving from on-prem into cloud. That's not helped us in the past to be able to leverage on things like digital channels. But now that I've got intelligent infrastructure being another go-to market, I can talk to the exec and say, "Exec, I need you to go to, for example, an Absa and help them with their digital transformation strategy so that I can be able to put a digitally transformed contact center for them so they are able to utilize not just voice, but are able to have a plethora of other services that support and move them from a current traditional contact center into a service center of the future." So that's how I am leveraging on the other contact centers. And the other part is, even with ISEC being security, they can build an instance for what I'm working on to enhance my value proposition and be able to pass services to a client so that it makes sense in terms of how we take them forward and how we drive the value proposition.
A lot of things have been said about how COVID-19 has actually driven a lot of digitalization of businesses' processes. We're just seeing some of the news coming out from Cell C, for example, saying they're going to close more than 100 of their stores because of exactly what you're saying, that customers are sort of looking for that human contact, but in an electronic way. You'd rather talk to someone either over the phone, through an app or something. So do you find that in coming up with these solutions for your clients, is there some type of an educational element or barrier that you guys have to fight in terms of getting the end customer themselves to actually use the technology in the way that you guys, as the developers of the technology, would have envisioned it as coming in to solve the problem of the client?
Yeah. At the heart of customer experience is the constant evolution that our customers go through. So if I look at either a bank or a retail company, their biggest hurdle is not just educating or making a client aware. It's enabling a client to adopt the particular technology. So some clients, given their age, given their preference, and so on, they prefer voice. And you're right by saying what has happened with COVID, which has helped us as a region to catapult from our traditional voice hub into digital channels has been quite phenomenal. I mean, we've been trying to push this. If I look at our CX benchmarking report, 3 years ago, we said the leading trends in the globe is the move from voice into applications, into, we called it in 2018, multi-channels. Then we went from multi-channels into omni-channel, meaning that we were talking about you changing from just talking on the phone or on the website or on the application to social media, to chatbots, to so on and so forth. But the MEA region, we remained behind because we still wanted to communicate predominantly with voice. And if you think about a company that has 3,000 agents, you can imagine their telephone bill, because now each agent is on the phone with a person for either 30 minutes or 15 minutes or so on, because they want to talk to a person over the voice. Now with what you were saying about Celsi in a branch, as part and parcel of digital transformation of several companies, the first thing was about how do you reduce your on-prem costs? And your client, when they talk to you, they need to talk to you through, because remember, in terms of a service can be online as long as the client receives what they ask for. If a client wants, for example, a ticket to fly to Cape Town, they don't have to go to the airport to go buy it. They can buy it online. I mean, that's been working quite well. It's the same now with clothing in the retail space. The client wants to buy a blanket for winter. They can actually buy it online, or sheets or whatever. They can buy it online instead of going to the particular store. So the stores also realize that they're having a high cost of rent. How can they reduce that cost and use it for something better in the app, in the web, and so on and so forth? What has been hindering us is the end client. If a client does not want particular service, how do you get them to understand that it's good for them? COVID has enabled us to do that, because with COVID, clients are now saying, I don't want to leave my house and be in a crowded shopping center. I want to be at home, order, and get it to me as simple as possible. This is now enabling the stores, the banks, and so on to transform distribution from being through a branch, but through a better logistic method. So the balance, Mudiwa, that we need to reach for educating our customers is first and foremost how our customer wants to be dealt with. What are their preferences, and how is customer experience to them maintaining client centricity? The second point is, how do you maintain quality service? Because that's always a key. If you look at the Gartner report, it says the highest point of customer experience is being able to preempt your customer needs before they tell you. So if your customer says, I am ordering online for something, they expect that when it should be the same as if they're in the shop. So how does a retail company or a bank enable that to happen? And I think the third one is adaptability and ease of use. Whatever platform that you're giving your client, be it an app, be it what, how easy is it to use, despite the age of a client, whether it's an 80-year-old, 70-year-old, a 15-year-old, the ease of use of that technology should not hinder your client experience. It should actually be an enhancer to client experience. It should be preactive or preemptive in terms of how they'll react back to the retail or the store. So that, for me, that balance between those three is quite important.
I guess it's very interesting when you're talking, and then I'm actually picturing in my head the different use cases that people have for e-commerce, especially pre-COVID. As you said, a lot of people sort of had stuck to their old ways of doing things. But very interestingly, when you look at the airline industry, which you alluded to, people are very comfortable to be buying airline tickets, even though in the greater context of things, airline tickets are a much higher value item that we're trusting to a simple online process versus lower valued, quote unquote, lower valued goods and transactions, where we traditionally wanted to have that that human experience. Because back in the day, a person would call a travel agent, say where they want to go, give all their details over the phone, and then, or go into a travel center or something and do that entire process. But people have taken it upon themselves. So it's very interesting when you are just describing the different ways in which customers actually look at these different scenarios and what that is actually going to mean going forward.
Yeah, I do think at the heart of it, I mean, one of the things that we learn about customer experience is that trust and loyalty are key pillars. With the airline industry, given how long they've been running those online platforms, I mean, the society as a whole has gotten to a point where they trust the system, they trust the methodology. To what extent is the retail industry enabling that trust and loyalty? To what extent does someone feel, if I buy a dress online, will I get what I see? Will the material feel it the same way as I imagine it to? And I do think that's where the overlap has always been. There's some things that can be sold online, product-wise, and some things that can't. I do think that that's where the whole e-commerce growth will come from. How do you enhance the trust and loyalty from clients that they can be able to feel that whatever I'm buying, whether it's Zando, whether it's Echo, whether it's Woolies, it's all the same. I trust that I'm going to get what I expect to get from the product. That's quite key, that I think, in terms of the growth there.
I want to maybe shift the conversation now, because we've spoken a lot just around what's going on at Dye Data around the rebranding and also just the intelligent customer experiences. But I want to maybe hone in on your specific position, because we are still in Women's Month, and you are an executive at one of the biggest technology companies in South Africa. I'd like to put you on the spot, if I may, you know, for a moment, and just maybe get a sense for our listeners of what your career has been like to get you to this point that you're at.
Talking about women, given that it's still our month, I really enjoy this month, and this is one of my most interesting topics and passionate topics that I like talking about. So from a background perspective, I'm a chartered accountant by training. I moved into technology about four or five years ago. My propelling reason for moving from being an audit partner into tech, there's a few reasons. The first one was I wanted to experience the otherness. I'd never been in any other corporate company except the audit world, which was quite structured. And I wanted to experience what a vibrant environment, a vibrant innovative environment feels like, which, because I didn't have the exposure to that before. And that became the two reasons, I suppose. But the third one also, I was doing my MBA at the time, and someone in our class had a dimension data presentation, and they're presenting about the Tour de France. And it spoke about how data analytics was enabling the cyclists to either perform better, or you can preempt how they will end the race. So for me, that was quite exciting. I thought, I've never seen this in anything that I've done in my old background. And that's when I moved to Dimension Data. And at the time, I used to oversee the finances around managed services, outsourced models. And it was interesting for me to see how you can take different technology and enable a company to operate at its best, for lack of a better term. And what I also realized that there were not too many women in this space. I mean, at the time when I came in, only Zella and Michaela. Zella is our corporate governance exec, and Michaela is our HR exec. There were the women that I was seeing in the company, and I wasn't seeing anybody else. And for me, that piqued interest in terms of, where are the women in this industry? What are they doing? How are they moving forward? And I think from then I've learned about Lillian Barnard at Microsoft. I've learned about a few women in African Bank, and so on and so forth. So it is a space where a lot of women could take up space. I mean, I've met a few women even in our business who are technical technical accelerator program, and they're working on building out bots and building out new technology that we're moving into, as I mentioned, data. I had never experienced anything like that, but I find that this is a space for us women to be able to do a lot more. We are able to collaborate by our nature as being nurturers. nurturers, we're able to also bring about a different way of thinking, I think. So I'm looking forward to interacting a lot more with women in tech. I think it's quite interesting and exciting to see even the change in career that I've had, where I move from being a finance person into now I'm a tech exec running a go-to-market in ICX. And I think that's where DD also sort of helped me to change and metamorphose into something new. Gave me an opportunity to be able to find things that I would never would have found in an audit firm, for example. I was a consultant before. Now I'm able to talk technology, to understand how the business side and tech come together. So that's where I think I'm seeing a future for women in tech as well.
Perhaps you could also then talk to us. I'm happy to say that we've actually had Lillian Barnard of Microsoft on this platform. You know, quite a intelligent and phenomenal business leader. How do we create more leaders like that? Or rather, what have been some of the mental or social barriers that have created that situation where we aren't seeing more Lillian Barnards in the space?
There's three reasons that I can actually talk to. The first one is the history of this being predominantly a male environment. And I think sometimes it appears to be daunting. And there's sometimes a lot of glass ceilings that block the way forward. Secondly, I think us as women, some women are not too keen on breaking barriers, while some are. I do think that what we need to do, especially the women that are already in the industry, we need to open up the path for others to come in. I'm reading a book by Dr. Judy Dlamini, where she talks about equal but different. And one of the things that she mentions is that us as women need to, when you are the only one in a particular space, you can't be happy and satisfied about that. You need to open the doors for others to come in. And I think that's what we need to do in tech. I can't be happy being the only or amongst the three or the four execs in the company. That doesn't make sense. A lot more women need to come in and be able to take up space like I have. And it is lying on what do I do about enabling that. And the third one, for me, it's the pipeline. How are we mentoring, how we create succession planning for other women to be able to take up the space, be it coders, be it engineers, be it execs across the industry, how are we enabling them to see the path? And for me, those three things are quite key. We as women need to break that ceiling. And corporates need to open up those paths for us to enter, and we need to have the pipeline coming through for women in tech to take up space.
As we end off the discussion, I do like the fact that you've brought up those three points that sort of explain one of the some of the reasons why the pipeline is not as big, as large, or where it could be. But we want to end off by asking a question that we've asked some of our other guests, particularly during this month. And it's about, you know, the progress that's been made. Do you think any progress has been made just in terms of enabling an environment where you do have more women in technology? Or is it still something that is just being given more talk time than anything else from your vantage point?
So first and foremost, I do believe that there's been progress. We can always argue and say, is it good enough? And I think that's where the wheels come off. We can always do more in terms of the progress. One topic which you're not asking me, that's at the heart, at my heart, especially this year, is gender-based violence. But I'm not going to go into it because it's quite a hectic topic. But I do think that there's been progress, but it's not enough. We could do a lot more legislatively. We could do a lot more as corporates in opening the paths for women. We can do a lot
as women ourselves. I mean, we were talking the other day and I was saying, I would like to be able to have a forum or an event with other women in the industry, not talking about feelings, not talking about, you know, how difficult it is to break the ceiling, but talking about us as women leaders. How do we enable each other? If I've got business, how do I do business with other leaders in the industry? And how do we open up for each other? For me, that's where I think we can do a lot more work. We can do a lot more progress, us as women taking that lead and ensuring that we actually help each other. I think the community as women, we're not robust enough to help each other. We're doing it in pockets, but we're not out there enough to just push this lever and just open the doors wide enough for everybody.
I'd like us to just, I had said that was the last question, but, you know, if you'll allow me just on the point, because you did bring in quite a hectic topic. So I guess we can then end off on that to say, how do you think some of the wider societal issues that we are dealing with, you just mentioned gender-based violence, because, you know, sometimes it does feel as if a conversation about women in technology sort of gets closed off to women in technology and, you know, professions and, you know, technical ability. And it sometimes it feels as if, from what you're saying, that the wider society has an impact on some of the more specific issues in each industry. Am I understanding you correctly on that one?
They do. I mean, one of the reasons why the GBV topic for me is, it's somewhat painful, but also I don't understand why in 2020 we're going through such a painful and violent experience as women. And that's what I was talking about legislation. I don't understand why we've not moved leaps and bounds in ensuring that from a legislation perspective, women are protected and feel protected in this country. Secondly, the other point, I mean, I remember when I was much younger, I had a car accident, and in my car accident, I remember I had to go to the police station to go cry about it. And when I got there, it was, and I know a lot of people have experienced this, but for me, what was quite, I think it hurt me a bit was the inhumane nature of how they dealt with my case. I went back to police station, I think about a year later, and my cell phone had been mugged and my cell phone was taken. And I experienced the same thing in both occasions, where the person behind the counter, who was a man, had no emotions. And so I'm saying this one is bigger than the GBV one. But I do think that as a country, legislation, we need to fix that. Two, the process of how we deal with GBV. For me, it's fair. It's an emotive point when someone goes through it, like what Tsego went through, Tsego Basopule went through, and what the lady in Cape Town went through. We're all emotional, we all cried, but thereafter, it's like another story. Another story comes up. There's no proper proactive action to stop this particular behavior. And I do think the government needs to do something a lot more to make sure that this thing stops. We can't continue like this beyond 2020. We can't continue. We can't tolerate this behavior. It's just inhumane and it's not fair on anybody, especially the women that end up losing their lives because of GBV.
So that's where we end off in this episode of the Business Day Spotlight. We're with Nompumelelo Moko, who is an executive for intelligent customer experience at Dimension Data. She was talking to us about what's going on at Dimension Data in terms of just unpacking their one Dimension Data branding decision that was announced earlier this year. And then we spoke quite extensively around some of the customer experience governance developments that they are involved in, just making sure that the transitions to more digitalization are made smoother and are adopted by more and more people, and especially at a time when a lot of customer behavior is being forced to change and adoption of technology has been enhanced. Ending off, just talking about the state of women in technology, she gave us her story, having moved from being in the world of accounting and auditing to making the switch to the technology environment, talking about some of the barriers that are holding us back from having more women in executive positions in technology companies and firms. And then just ending off talking about some of the wider issues around gender-based violence, talking about how, you know, they, as much as we can talk about women in technology, there are bigger issues that have to be addressed at a macro level, on a national level. And she's saying that she doesn't understand why people are still dealing with these issues in 2020.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Another fascinating conversation with a business leader, technology focused there, with Nompumelelo. And for me, there are two big points, that stood out just in terms of what's happening. And the first one is just how companies, and especially technology companies, because right now we're really talking a lot around technology adoption and how COVID-19 has forced a lot of technology adoption, technology change, and how that is affecting the way that people do business. Referring to Cell C, which last week announced that it's going to be closing down some of its shops. It's nothing new per se when you consider that Telkom cited similar reasons for its own retrenchments, talking about shifts in customer behavior towards more online and digital platforms. MultiChoice talking about the same thing with its retrenchments last year, together with banks that have been cutting down some of their banking hall space, and also talking about how shifts to digital are affecting their operations. So it's quite interesting to hear what technologies companies are coming up with to deal and to give customers better experiences when they're interfacing with companies, but also how they think about where the human factor is. And at least in a country like South Africa, as Nompumelelo was talking about, there is still that need, there is still that human factor that people in this region do crave. So you have the need for the human, and hopefully that's something that is able to protect livelihoods going forward, as people go through this transitionary period trying to reimagine or trying to reconfigure their workforces towards more of these digital supports. The second issue is just on what she raised just around the women in tech debate and conversation, because she mentioned a lot of different factors that are stopping more leaders like herself from being in those positions. But more importantly, putting a spotlight on the macro issues, because the way an economy works is that at the end of the day, a combination of the micro makes up the macro, right? A combination of us as individual consumers makes up the total economy of 50 million odd people in South Africa. But at the same time, the issues at the top affect each person on the bottom. So if an issue like gender-based violence is not being addressed at a national level, then at an individual household, community, village, city, town, municipal level, it's very hard to deal with those issues on a day-to-day basis, which then feeds into the prospects of women in technology, because it's not necessarily about women in technology, but just shedding a spotlight on the fact that there are these issues, big issues, that then affect how you know, specific industries, sectors, and an issue like women in tech are then perceived, and then how progress in those spaces is made. So definitely important ones to be considering, and just hoping that whoever's listening to this is doing their bit on their own micro individual level to make sure that these issues are addressed and do not perpetuate into the future. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Thank you so much to Nompumelelo for making herself available to us. Now, remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter, where hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller, together with Didi Mashamaite. I've been Mudiwa Gawaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.